From national news in D.C.
to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol,
this is your Capitol Connection.
And now, bringing the Capitol to you,
here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to the program. We are broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, talking about the issues that matter most, family, freedom, and life. And with so much going on across the world and in our country and in politics and government and popular culture, we try to talk about the most pressing issues and provide a biblical perspective on what's going on, how Christians should think about these issues, and what you need to know, and what's going on at our nation's capital and our state capital, and how it affects you and your family. And on today's show, we're going to talk a lot about religious freedom and an event that took place this past week in our nation's capital that was billed as the largest religious freedom event ever. The Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom that was hosted by the U.S. Department of State. We'll talk about what that is and why it matters in light of a major new report that indicates no matter where you are, religious freedom is getting worse. Plus, we'll also talk about why a female star soccer player who is an outspoken Christian, why many people believe she was kept off of the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team's run at the World Cup. But first, we have to start the show today talking about what I think is just a really fascinating and very revealing story that came out this past week, in which Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion provider, fired their new president, who had been on the job for only 8 months, and she was fired for not being pro-abortion enough. That's why she was forced out of the organization. And this all spilled out where else but on Twitter. Dr. Leanna Wen, who is the president and CEO for Planned Parenthood, tweeted that Planned Parenthood's board had, quote, ended my employment at a secret meeting. We were engaged in good faith negotiations about my departure based on philosophical differences over the direction and future of Planned Parenthood. And in further tweets and statements from Dr. Wang, it was revealed that those philosophical differences were over abortion and how large of a role abortion should be in Planned Parenthood. And apparently, Dr. Wen, who isn't exactly a pushover when it comes to being a champion of abortion, she was not willing, or at least their board didn't think she was enough of an abortion advocate to continue leading the organization. And Leanna Wen, she had even gone as far during her short tenure as the director of Planned Parenthood to say that abortion saves lives. And this just really should tell you everything that you need to know about this organization. And it got even more interesting because Dr. Wen released a letter. She posted a letter that she had sent to Planned Parenthood officials after her termination, in which she said that she was, quote, leaving the organization sooner than I hoped. I came to Planned Parenthood to run a national healthcare organization and to advocate for the broad range of public health policies that affect our patients' health. And that sounds like something most people can get behind, and is exactly what Planned Parenthood claims to be all about. But she then added, quote, the new board leadership has determined that the priority of Planned Parenthood moving forward is to double down on abortion rights advocacy. So she was let go for wanting to put too much focus and energy on healthcare and not doubling down on abortion advocacy. And that, I hope, really just grabs a lot of people, the fact that Planned Parenthood fired their CEO, who is very much pro-abortion, for not being pro-abortion enough and for trying to focus on expanding other areas and focusing on real health care instead of abortion, and they fired her. It did certainly get the attention of Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse, who released a statement when this news came out saying, quote, Planned Parenthood's outgoing president just told the world she was fired for not being enough of a pro-abortion zealot. They killed Safe, Legal, and Rare years ago. They lobby for abortion anytime, anywhere, for any reason. Why? Because they are a giant corporation that cares more about making money than about women. They shouldn't get a dime from taxpayers. That from Senator Sasse. And I'm just going to let that speak for itself. Planned Parenthood firing their very pro-abortion CEO for focusing too much on healthcare, for not being political enough, and for not being willing to double down on abortion advocacy. Now, turning to the religious freedom front, one of our most fundamental human rights and an issue that requires constant vigilance and attention, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo last week convened the second ever ministerial to advance religious freedom at the U.S. Department of State in Washington, D.C. And this is an event that brings together 1,000 foreign ministers, religious leaders, and others from 115 nations with the goal to better understand the challenges and devise strategies to confront intolerance, discrimination, and abuse. According to Secretary Pompeo, advancing international religious freedom for all remains one of the defining challenges of the 21st century and is a top foreign policy priority of the administration. This ministerial is touted as the biggest religious freedom event ever, and also, very importantly, provides a platform for survivors of religious persecution from around the world to tell their stories of courage and endurance. This is a very important issue, but here's why, especially now, this is so important and why it's essential that the U.S. government continue to play a major leadership role on the world stage to advance and protect religious freedom for all. According to a major new report that came out last week just before this ministerial, no matter where you are, religious freedom is getting worse. A decade of analysis from Pew Research details what global faith leaders already know. From China to Europe, from the Middle East to the U.S., persecution is climbing. And it's getting worse, especially for Christians, the most harassed religious group in the world, and it's becoming more widespread. Hostility against religious minorities spans longstanding hotspots in the Middle East and North Africa, to Western contexts in Europe and the Americas, according to this comprehensive analysis released last week from the Pew Research Center. And this breakdown that comes from Christianity Today, looking at this study and analysis, points out that Christians endured more pushback than any other religious group each year from 2007 to 2017, when they faced harassment in 143 countries. This week, Sam Brownback, the U.S. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, who spoke at the Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom, and he gave an inspiring and compelling speech about religious freedom, and I'll play a clip here shortly, but he talked about how religious freedom is a human right that everybody is entitled to, and that they need to be able to practice their faith peacefully and without fear. However, this recent Pew Research study builds on earlier reports that looked at year-over-year change and offers a decade-long picture of religious freedom's global decline and the need for greater political action to curb this trend. Christians remain the largest and most harassed faith community, and Muslims are not far behind, with reports of political or social oppression in 140 countries in 2017. Jews, the third most targeted group, were persecuted in 87 countries, despite having a disproportionately smaller population than Christianity and Islam. The most recent data indicates that 52 governments, more than one in four, imposed high or very high levels of religious restrictions 2 years ago, up from 40 in 2007. The highest levels of social hostility involving religion were reported in 56 countries by the end of the study, up from 39 at the start. And big countries like China, Indonesia, and Russia are some of the worst offenders, and Christians are the biggest target. By the end of the study, for instance, China had boosted efforts to detain and deport Christian missionaries, and in just the last year, reports from the State Department, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, and the World Watch List have called out China's continuing horrible track record as a violator of religious freedom, citing everything from the shuttering of hundreds of churches and a ban on buying Bibles online. And it's very noteworthy in this study that not only are religious restrictions rising everywhere, but it's happening the fastest in Europe. The Pew report uses two 10-point indices to gauge levels of religious repression, one of which measures government restrictions and the other social hostilities. Both metrics are further divided into four categories for a total of 8 measuring sticks for religious freedom. And the biggest rise comes in the category of hostilities related to religious norms, which refers to harassment and antagonism around things like women not abiding by religious dress codes. Religious freedom violations are the most severe in the Middle East and North Africa, but restrictions and harassment are climbing everywhere, especially in Europe, with its score doubling over the decade of the study. Legal limits on religious activities, like efforts to restrict proselytizing, are up dramatically in Europe. In 2007, 5 countries in Europe had restrictions on things like religious dress and religious symbols. 10 years later, 20 European countries had codified such restrictions. Now, back on our side of the globe, the study showed that religious freedom is the best in the Americas, but it is declining. In all categories, the Americas were the region with the fewest restrictions and hostilities toward religion. But even here, all measures point to rising levels of harassment and repression. Over the period of the study, the number of countries in the Americas with noted government restrictions on religious activities increased from 16 to 28. Now, specifically in the United States, limits on religious activity and individual or social group hostilities based on religion increased dramatically between 2007 and 2017. Again, in the United States, between 2007 and 2017, limits and repression of religion and religious activity increased dramatically. And among the 25 most populous countries, home to more than 3/4 of the global population, China, Iran, Russia, Egypt, and Indonesia have the harshest government restrictions based on religion. The freest of these big countries in terms of religion are South Africa, Japan, the Philippines, Brazil, and South Korea, and the United States falls closer to the middle of the group. Dr. David Curry, who is the president and CEO of Open Doors USA, a major global religious freedom organization, he authored what I found to be a profound call to action in USA Today last month about this very issue, and the title of his editorial is blunt. Quote, "Global Christian persecution is worsening while American churches slumber." Now, we were honored to actually have Dr. Curry on the program previously as a special guest to talk about this issue, and I wanted to share today part of what he had to say in his recent editorial about religious persecution and what the American church can do. Dr. Curry wrote that Christians in America need to wake up, yet the leadership of the American church with its super pastors and megachurches is whistling through the graveyard. The beast that we have created, which relies on upbeat music and positivity to attract donors to sustain large budgets, leaves little room for pastors to talk about the suffering of global Christians. Like most of our culture, the American church is more concerned about college entrance scandals and Game of Thrones than persecution. Inoculated by entertainment and self-absorption, they are completely detached from the experience of the global church. The American church is feeding itself to death while the worldwide church is being murdered. My prayer is that we will soon be shocked from our sleep and jolted into action. We must educate American congregations about global religious rights abuses and then engage this crisis together. Encourage Christian allies to write letters to encourage victims of religious violence, pray for specific incidents reported through the international network, and host events in churches to help raise awareness. I envision a world where American Christians remember persecuted Christians in hostile region in every church, every Sunday. Through these sorts of efforts, I have hope that an awakening is possible. And Ambassador Brownback, who I alluded to earlier, he spoke about this at the Religious Freedom Ministerial, about believing that this type of awakening is possible and about being jolted into action. Here is part of what Ambassador for Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback, had to say. Take a listen.
I hope you can sense and feel some of the history and the importance, really, of this moment and this moment in time. A global human rights movement centered on religious freedom is being launched from this meeting. That's our intent. You're here at the inception. But after this, we ask that you take your station around the world to protect this fundamental freedom. This right extends to all, everywhere, all the time. It is a God-given right governments must protect if their people are to prosper. Most people around the world profess a faith and experience a deep need to nurture that call from within. Now, governments, of course, are not religious institutions, but they are expected to protect religious spaces and the right of individuals to practice their beliefs, without which the faithful cannot thrive. Government, therefore, provides a key role for people of faith around the world. But the situation is grim. Although most of the world is religious, 80% of the world's population live in a religiously restrictive place. It's time, it is past time, to bring down these religious restrictions so that the iron curtain of religious persecution can come down for one and all, and it comes down now. Just really imagine the burst of freedom most of the world's population would experience, if religious freedom were protected. Imagine the prosperity we can create together if our world was put on a path of growth of religious freedom. First, of course, we need to believe that this is possible and it can happen. In fact, it must happen for humans to reach their aspirations for peace and for eternity. Second, we need to remember we all already have a common foundation. The countries of the world agree on religious freedom for all. It is in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that you'll see posted around this conference. It is also in the Constitution of most countries. Article 18 of that Declaration of Human Rights states this, and it's very clear: everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. This right includes freedom to change his religion or belief, and freedom, either alone or in community with others, and in public or private, to manifest his religion or belief in teaching, practice, worship, and observance. Very clear, very broad, and for everybody. Under international law, even during a time of public emergency, states cannot derogate from their obligation to protect religious freedom. What is abundantly clear today is that this right is not experienced by many people around the world. And that's where you come in. We need your activism. We need your passion. We need you to boldly fight for religious freedom, for yourself and all of those who profess your faith, and taking it this essential step forward, joining together to fight with those who profess different faiths. This is a right that only exists if all experience it. This is not an exercise here in trying to achieve some sort of common theology. We don't agree on that. This is an exercise to protect a common human right, religious freedom. We seek to have all the religions and governments of the world come together around this concept that religious freedom for everyone, everywhere, and all the time is their right. So join us in this vision. Let's determine to fight for each other's God-given right to religious freedom. Let this be the beginning of a global grassroots movement for religious freedom. Let this be the time the world's faiths come together to stand for each other's ability to exist and to exist peacefully without fear. Let's bring all our faiths alive and respect, even love one another, no matter what we believe. We all are part of a common humanity. The United States seeks to partner with religious and civil society groups to advance this cause. This administration sees the killing, imprisonments, harassment, and persecution on the basis of religious beliefs around the world, and we see it as a global crisis that has received far too little attention, a global crisis that we are determined to reverse.
I love that message from Ambassador Brownback, religious freedom all the time for all people. And I'm so encouraged and grateful for the continued work of this administration as they fight for religious freedom both internationally and here in the United States. And that brings me to our closing subject on the show today about the U.S. women's soccer team, which, of course, has been in the headlines for weeks throughout their impressive, dominant run through the Women's World Cup, ultimately culminating in a championship for the U.S. women's soccer team, as well as a very public war of words with the president. But it's a story that resurfaced this past week that is raising new questions about just how tolerant and diverse this team really is. And this is from the Washington Times, an article titled U.S. Women's Team Snub of Christian Player Royals Soccer. And this has to do with a star player who was left off of the team for what many believe is purely political reasons, and specifically this player's Christian beliefs. And the article describes how Jalene Hinkle, a 26-year-old star for the North Carolina Courage professional soccer team, has been called the top left defender in the United States game, but wasn't selected for the national team, a decision that may have had more to do with politics than prowess. Because in 2017, this player turned down a call-up from the national team for a pair of international friendlies after learning that the players would be required to wear rainbow-themed jerseys in honor of Gay Pride Month. She said later that the uniform conflicted with her Christian faith and would not play in the game because she would not wear that jersey. And ever since she made that decision, she has not played for the national team. Now, of course, the coach for the World Cup team, Jill Ellis, told reporters that that decision was solely based on soccer, but that explanation has been greeted with widespread criticism. Even the Irish Times ran an article in June titled, Religious Clash Leaves USA's Best Left Back an Observer of the World Cup Bid. John Stone Street, the president of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, had this to say, quote, you do have a very activist team. It's very much a part of the program. And if we're talking about just any player, it wouldn't be really clear. But just because of her abilities, Jalene Hinkle is a heck of a player. It makes it that much more suspect. He said the episode offered a warning to Christians seeking to live out their faith while pursuing their professional dreams. Chances are that they too will have to face a choice. It could be whether to wear the jersey. It could be whether to bake the cake. We know that increasingly there is going to have to be conformity on your viewpoint to be able to participate. Obedience now comes at a price. And the World Cup's team, their activism is well established. And specifically their LGBT activism, and a star who did play on the U.S. Women's World Cup team responded to the story and to Jalene Hinkle, and they made it very clear. You know, they didn't respond and say, hey, look, we're very tolerant of everyone, and you weren't on the team because you weren't good enough. She said, no, you weren't on the team because we don't like your views, and you're, by the way, a homophobe. Soccer star Ashlyn Harris responded on Twitter, writing, quote, Hinkle, our team is about inclusion. Your religion was never the problem. The problem is your intolerance and you are homophobic. You don't belong in the sport that aims to unite and bring people together. You would never fit into our pack or what this team stands for, which is supposedly inclusion, but also we don't tolerate anyone who disagrees with us. And this doesn't have anything to do with your talent or your abilities. We just don't like your politics and don't like your Christian beliefs. And obviously, the women's team performed brilliantly and brought home a championship. But the lesson here is very clear. Christians need not apply. And if you do, you will conform and you will keep your beliefs to yourself, or you will face the consequences. But there's also a very important lesson here. This player made a decision to stand for what she believed in. And whether you think she was right or wrong, or you would do it differently or completely disagree with her, she chose to stand up for her beliefs and to do what she thought was right and was willing to sacrifice the ultimate prize in her profession. So now the question is, will we? That's all the time we have for this week. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for the Nebraska Family Alliance, hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.